Valentine celebrated Ender's 8th birthday alone, in the wooded backyard of their new home in Greensboro. She scraped a patch of ground bare of pine needles and leaves, and there scratched his name in the dirt with a twig. Then she made a small teepee of twigs and needles and lit a small fire. It made smoke that interwove with the branches and needles of the pine overhead. "All the way into space," she said silently. "All the way to the battle school." No letters had ever come, and as far as they knew, their own letters had never reached him. When he first was taken, father and mother sat at the table and keyed in long letters to him every few days. Soon, though, it was once a week, and when no answers came, once a month. Now it had been 2 years since he went, and there were no letters, none at all, and no remembrance on his birthday. "He is dead," she thought bitterly, "because we have forgotten him." But Valentine had not forgotten him. She did not let her parents know, and above all never hinted to Peter how often she thought about Ender, how often she wrote him letters that she knew he would not answer. And when mother and father had announced to them that they were leaving the city to move to North Carolina, of all places, Valentine knew that they never expected to see Ender again. They were leaving the only place where he knew to find them. How would Ender find them here, among these trees, under this changeable and heavy sky? He had lived deep in corridors all his life, and if he was still in the battle school, there was less of nature there. What would he make of this? Valentine knew why they had moved here. It was for Peter, so that living among trees and small animals, so that nature, in as raw a form as mother and father could conceive of it, might have a softening influence on their strange and frightening son. And in a way, it had. Peter took to it right away. Long walks out in the open, cutting through woods and out into the open country, going sometimes for a whole day, with only a sandwich or two sharing space with his desk in the pack on his back, with only a small pocket knife in his pocket. But Valentine knew. She had seen a squirrel, half-skinned, spiked by its little hands and feet, with twigs pushed into the dirt. She pictured Peter trapping it, staking it, then carefully parting and peeling back the skin without breaking into the abdomen, watching the muscles twist and ripple. How long had it taken the squirrel to die? And all the while Peter had sat nearby, leaning against the tree where perhaps the squirrel had nested, playing with his desk while the squirrel's life seeped away. At first, she was horrified and nearly threw up at dinner, watching how Peter ate so vigorously, talked so cheerfully. But later she thought about it and realized that perhaps, for Peter, it was a kind of magic, like her little fires, a sacrifice that somehow stilled the dark gods that hunted for his soul. Better to torture squirrels than other children. Peter has always been a husbandman of pain, planting it, nurturing it, devouring it greedily when it was ripe. Better he should take it in these small, sharp doses than with dull cruelty to children in the school. "A model student," said his teachers. "I wish we had 100 others in the school just like him. Studies all the time. Turns in all his work on time. He loves to learn." But Valentine knew it was a fraud. Oh, Peter loved to learn, all right, but the teachers hadn't taught him anything, ever. He did his learning through his desk at home, tapping into libraries and databases, studying and thinking, and above all, talking to Valentine. Yet at school he acted as though he were excited about the puerile lesson of the day. "Oh, wow, I never knew that frogs looked like this inside," he'd say. And then at home he studied the binding of cells into organisms through the philotic collation of DNA. Peter was a master of flattery, and all his teachers bought it. Still, it was good. Peter never fought anymore, never bullied, got along well with everybody. It was a new Peter. Everyone believed it. Father and mother said it so often it made Valentine want to scream at them. It isn't the new Peter. It's the old Peter, only smarter. How smart? Smarter than you, Father. Smarter than you, Mother. Smarter than anybody you have ever met. But not smarter than me. I've been deciding, said Peter, whether to kill you or what. Valentine leaned against the trunk of the pine tree, her little fire a few smoldering ashes. I love you too, Peter. It would be so easy. You always make these stupid little fires. It's just a matter of knocking you out and burning you up. You're such a fire bug. I've been thinking of castrating you in your sleep. No, you haven't. You only think of things like that when I'm with you. I bring out the best in you. No, Valentine, I've decided not to kill you. I've decided that you're going to help me. I am. A few years ago, Valentine would have been terrified at Peter's threats. Now, though, she was not so afraid. Not that she doubted that he was capable of killing her. She couldn't think of anything so terrible that she didn't believe Peter might do it. She also knew, though, that Peter was not insane. Not in the sense that he wasn't in control of himself. He was in better control of himself than anyone she knew, except perhaps herself.